This is Leafs Lunch Playoff Edition with Julia Tesheri and Michael DiStefano on TSN 1050. The playoffs live here.
Second hour Leafs Lunch. I'm Mike DiStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. Got Frank Corrado with me. We'll be joined by his teammate, Connor Carrick, in a few moments. You joined his podcast.
I did,
not too long ago.
Yeah, he's doing a good job with that.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about his podcast, and he's a very interesting guy. He's got a lot of interests outside of hockey, but he doesn't necessarily want to talk hockey on the podcast. And I feel like hockey players always get typecast into this thing where it becomes, being a hockey player is your identity.
Right.
That's who you are. But there's so much more. Like, hockey players have so many other interests, and I think he does a really good job of tapping into that. And, you know, like, him and I will talk about coffee or training and golf. Like, there's so much to talk about. I think he's really big into, like, health, you know, like, supplements
fitness,
and making sure you're eating the right way. And so he's a really interesting guy, and I'm curious to get his thoughts on a few of the things, and even talk about his time in Toronto. You know, we were teammates for a little bit, and we went through a little bit of similar experiences here playing for the Maple Leafs. And you know, he's part of the Seattle Kraken now, part of their organization, played this year in Charlotte. And he's a good player. He's a good player, good defenseman, good guy. We'll pick his brain a little bit.
Yeah, well, he'll join us in about a couple of minutes here. So we'll look forward to talking to him. But I don't know if you heard Andrew Cogliano on the morning show today chatting with AK and Carlo. Fantastic interview. Go back and find that. If you didn't listen to it this morning, go download it, the podcast off iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, because it was great. But he talked about what it takes to win a championship, and it really stuck out to me. So I want to play that audio here. This was Andrew Cogliano talking about how he was fully invested and sacrificed himself to win a championship.
I will say I was fully invested in terms of sacrificing myself to win. And you know, I think I blocked more shots this playoffs than, you know, honestly, I have in maybe a couple of years, to be honest. And, you know, I think when you have a guy like me that with my mindset was just, I'm just going to do whatever I have to do to win, that, you know, that goes a long way when guys are watching. And, you know, younger guys are watching a guy like me basically do everything possible and play through some injuries. And you know, I think it just created us a good feeling with them. And, you know, it's nice to hear them say that. I think that's, for me, that's the one thing that I'll probably take from this run and this championship is I played a role and I helped those guys. And I was a significant part in, you know, helping them do this. And that's a great feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a tremendous feeling, especially since it ended up winning the Stanley Cup.
When you get the payoff, right? Like, you put yourself through so much, and you talk about physical warfare, but mental warfare, and he's just so dialed into his routine every single day. You get, like, this tunnel vision, right? And, man, what a feeling it must be to have that all pay off. And now you are labeled, you are branded as a champion.
Yeah.
They will introduce you as Andrew Cogliano, Stanley Cup champion. Al's brother, Stanley Cup champion.
If only one day, if only that could happen at some point. I think it's highly unlikely that
maybe
I could
analytics guy.
Get in there.
You think you could get in as an analytics guy somewhere?
I don't know.
You love a heat map. You love a pie graph. You love all the expected this, expected that. You love it, man.
Yeah, you think I could be, you know, like the next head of analytics?
I'll tell you what, though,
or something like that.
You need a nice pair of glasses with some thick black frames if you want to get started.
Is that what the guy on the line rocks, or is that what you're talking about? What you're rocking right now?
I think Connor wears glasses. I wear specs too, man. We look 10% smarter when we do.
Well, let's bring him in. Connor Carrick, former Maple Leafs defenseman, host of the Curious Competitor podcast. Connor, how are you?
Frankie, Mike, what's up, guys? I actually got LASIK, but I used to wear the glasses, and all it did was get me traded, so I'm not sure that's the that's the gravy train, but it can't hurt, I'm sure.
Oh man,
that's jokes.
It's nice to hear from you, buddy. We were we were talking a little bit about Andrew Cogliano, and you know, he was just saying how fully invested and sacrificing himself to win the Stanley Cup with Colorado he was. And you and I were talking about, and we were talking on your podcast about how we both played through significant injuries at certain points through our careers. And you know, maybe you can just touch on the mental warfare as well as the physical warfare you go through when you do that, and where are you at with guys doing that? Like, is it safe? Is it okay? Like, do you want to see guys doing that kind of stuff?
Well, it's definitely not safe. There's very few things that are good for health and longevity about pro sport, and particularly hockey. Andrew Cogliano, from a work ethic perspective and for a pain tolerance perspective, he's demonic. He's possessed, and he plays like that. He trains like that. We would have optional morning skates. I cross paths with him real quick for a cup of coffee, and I know you know that term well, Frankie.
Oh, yeah.
In Dallas, and you take these optional pregame skates, and you know most guys kind of dip their toe in the water, and he would come out like he was shot out of a cannon, and do you know 55 crossovers, rip a shot, grab another puck in the other corner, do these figure eights, and there was no off switch on the guy. And I don't think it's going anywhere, guys. There's a lot behind our careers, and guys are excited to play at the pinnacle. There's always a lot to lose. I think that's what always went through my mind anytime I played through something, was just the stages of grief. I couldn't believe what had happened.
Yeah,
I was going to try and deny it to be true, but eventually physiology grabs a hold of you, and yeah, you can only push it so far.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And someone's coming to take your spot. Like,
yeah.
You know someone's ready to go.
Well, I think the guy you're also kind of talking about, too, talking about guys who played through injury. Should he have? Maybe not. But Nazem Kadri, right? He had a six-week timeline, yeah, pushed it back, was able to return in just 2 weeks, and went on to win himself a Stanley Cup. Connor, I'm not sure how much you were tracking the cup finals, but I mean, what can you say about Nazem Kadri and the determination of what that guy is? I know you played with him here in Toronto for a little bit.
He's a competitor. He wants to win. You can use these words about a lot of guys because we are talking about our sport. It's a tough sport by nature, and we're talking about the highest level. And the Stanley Cup is the creme de la creme. And Nazem has earned the right to be a high-end center on a couple teams that have really eyed the Stanley Cup and think that they had a shot to win. He was always, not always in practice, as Frankie can say, but when the lights are on.
That's what they call a gamer. That's what they call a gamer, right?
If there was ever a gamer, if the term gamer didn't exist before Nazem Kadri, I like to call him Dream. But before Dream, he would have invented it. So it was fun to watch him win. He obviously had a little spice in his post game interview. That's well documented. I won't be the first or the last guy to bring that up.
Oh yeah, we loved it here.
But at a bare minimum, fun to see him do it.
Connor, the Sedin twins and Roberto Luongo, my former teammates, getting the call to the Hall of Fame, which I thought was really cool. The fact that I got to share the ice with these guys, and I was telling Al's brother here a little bit about my little bit of a welcome to the NHL moment, where I was 18 years old at training camp, and I had a 2-on-1 with the Sedin twins, and they did the old sauce pass right over the stick, right on the tape in the back of the net. And just kind of wondering from you, like, what was your first welcome to the NHL moment that really made you realize, oh wow, this is different, and I'm here. I'm in it now.
Well, my first NHL game was against the Stanley Cup defending Blackhawks, the Chicago Blackhawks, which is my hometown, right? And so I had hundreds of people there. They're raising the cup banner. They got the lights coming on as you're coming out, that historic and famous anthem. I'm on a 3-on-2. I want to say it was the third period. You know, it was the third period with Nick Backstrom, number 19, if you haven't heard of him, and Alex Ovechkin's on the right side because Adam Oates had him playing on the right side. If you'll remember, he wasn't on his famous left side. I get a puck as a trailer. I don't know if Nick Backstrom usually knows exactly who he's passing to. I think he might have thought I was somebody else. I used to wear my equipment like Mike Green on purpose just to get more pucks from him.
Yeah.
And he hits me, and Duncan Keith kind of was shadowing 8, as he should, and he starts to come towards me. So I'm all excited. I'm like, Alex Ovechkin's open. This is the easiest play I'll make all night. And Duncan Keith and all of his Hall of Famedom type defensemen, he fooled me, backed right off, plucked my pass, my one touch over, and he one touched it to a taken off Brandon Saad. He must have seen this act before too. And it wasn't a great goal, but it was a big goal for them. Saad takes a slap shot from just inside the blue line, goes in. I think they went up 1-2 at that point. I'm thinking, what happened?
Well, I don't know if you experienced this playing against the Blackhawks in that era. I played my first NHL game against them as well, and it was in 2013, and they won the cup that year. And someone before the game, I think it was Dan Hamhuis before the game, told me, he goes, when you make a point shot, he goes, be careful, because if Duncan Keith or Seabrook, if one of these guys knock it down and Kane's on the ice, Kane's not going to stop. He's actually just going to skate right to the far blue line and look for the breakaway pass. And I've never heard of this before, because I'm coming from junior hockey. And sure enough, at one point during the game, I let the little muffin floater go from the blue line. You know that shot, Cease. You've seen it before. And someone knocks it down, and I look back. I'm like, oh boy, there he is. That's Kane. And I think they didn't connect on it. And it didn't go for an icing. Our goalie, Corey Schneider, played it. But that was like Chicago, man. They were so wily in that time, and they could catch you sleeping, especially if you're a young guy.
Oh, best defense is a good offense, as written by, you know, that might be the autobiography of Pat Kane, number 88.
Yeah.
Special player. We had a similar circumstance the next year where I was on the team where Matthews and Marner were playing Taze and Kane for the first time. And Mike Babcock, I thought it was hilarious, telling guys to get their autographs out of the way in warm-ups, and when we play, it's for real. And we're not going to over-respect these guys. We're going to take time and space. Like the first play, I came down the wall to take away Kane, and they high-flipped the puck. I forget who was out in the neutral zone. I turn around, and William Nylander's taking a one-on-one. And I got chewed when I got back to the bench. I'm licking my laurels. I'm thinking, you know, I thought we just had the rah-rah, go get them, don't over-respect them speech, but...
Was that the one we got shelled? Did we get shelled that night and then Babs lost his mind after the first period?
I think so.
Yeah, I remember that one. I was at, so I didn't play that game, but I was at Eataly crushing some gelato with Griffith. And I got a call from Brad Holland, our team services guy, at like 5:30. Goes, Hunwick's not feeling well. You got to get to the rink and take warm up. I go, Brad,
oh no,
I'm gonna finish this gelato and then I'm on my way, buddy.
Eataly's a good spot. They just opened one in Toronto. I saw too. I was up there recently.
Oh yeah,
so maybe when I'm up there next, gelato on you.
Eataly, oh yeah, buddy,
Yorkville.
In conversation with Connor Carrick, former Maple Leafs defenseman, the host of the Curious Competitor podcast, and just on the topic of Auston Matthews, clearly he just went out and had an absolutely brilliant campaign, taking home the Ted Lindsay, the Hart Trophy. I mean, you were there young in his career. Did you envision him turning into the superstar that he is today?
Yes, I don't think I was alone in that opinion. When he had four goals that first night, I was like, I guess he's on pace for 200 plus this year. Like, what's the math on this?
Yeah.
And he's ripping pucks out of Eric Carlson's hands, and he's gonna challenge the status quo in a lot of ways. He scores in a lot of ways. He's big. There was a Barry Trotz quote about Anze Kopitar a couple years ago when I was in Washington's organization, and a couple years ago. This is probably 10 years ago now, and he said something about, you know, he's bigger than you think, he's faster than you think, he's more skilled than you think, and I think that's exponentially true for 34.
Connor, I know you're not a local guy here in Toronto, but and anytime a local player from here comes home and plays for the Leafs, they talk about how special it is. You can talk about Original Six, history, playing in front of family, all that kind of stuff. But for you, being a guy from Chicago, you did get a chance to play for the Leafs, an Original Six team. Was there anything special about wearing the Maple Leaf for you?
I mean, a ton. For one, I got to share it with you. We had a good time. No, I mean, it's a beautiful jersey. As a player, come on, there's nothing better than putting on, you know, some threads that you really you look good in. And I was always jealous as an American kid. I loved the culture of hockey in Canada. I loved seeing hockey players I knew on billboards. I loved seeing it in TV commercials. I loved when I turned on TSN, you know, Sports Center, and in the top 10 there'd be seven hockey plays versus one play every 2 weeks, like it was in the U.S. at the time. And I'm a couple years removed, right? And hindsight's 2020. I have a different sense of perspective. Some of, you know, the most exciting, nerve-wracking. I know you know the experience,
Frankie, yeah.
for what it was like to play in that market.
Oh, man.
Particularly with some of the circumstances that we did.
Well, you and I don't know if you remember, like, you and I got paired together in February of 2017 against the Rangers, and I hadn't played in like 3 months, and I'm thinking like, oh man, poor Carrick's got to play with me tonight. Like, I haven't played in 3 months. I've been eating pizza every game and popcorn, and Babcock's making a big deal about it, saying, oh, well, you know, you want an opportunity, so you got one here tonight. And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, man, like, way to put more pressure on me. Thanks. Like, it wasn't enough already.
Yeah, it was a unique environment. I remember that game supremely well, and wanting to play well for you. I don't think we did.
No, we got split up in like the first 50, period. You remember that? We got split up.
I do. And I remember the Michael Grabner clip. There was a face-off offensive zone, left side. You were playing the left. I was playing the right.
Yeah.
Two right shots, and there was like a 50-50 puck. I go to lunge forward. Our forward chips it through my feet. I don't remember who it was, and I was in a standstill. Michael Grabner was already on his way.
He's the fastest player in the world.
And I was en route to catch him. I think what did he have that year? He had a ton of...
Yeah, he had a 36.
He had a big year. In the island?
Yeah.
On the island?
Yeah,
like 36
and,
or something.
We showed the clip the next day. And, you know, Frank, you actually do the impersonation better. I used to have it a little fresher. I got to get my reps in. And he's like, you know, for Christ's sake, you gotta skate.
Oh,
you gotta
I do remember that. I remember that.
Myself, I'm like... Like, yeah, I'm not. We can count on one hand the D-men in this league. They're going to catch that guy, and they're not making what I'm making. And no. At some point, you get what you pay for.
But you know what, too? Like, and you think about as a player, all those video sessions you had, and like most of the video sessions were pretty informative. Like, and it doesn't matter who the coach is; it's more like big picture, philosophical stuff, structural stuff.
Right.
Anytime a coach wants to bring out like a one-on-one mishap or a bobbled puck or stuff like that, they're really making a point. You know, they're really making a point. It's like that's not really necessary. The rest of the group doesn't need to see that I didn't catch Michael Grabner on a breakaway. You know what the group needs to see? Where our D-zone breakdowns were, where our neutral zone breakdowns were. So you can just, you know, it's kind of nonsense. And, but you know, speaking of that, Connor, like, you and I have both had pretty interesting careers, and we've had ups, we've had downs. Are there any, I guess, lessons you learned along the way that you would have liked to have learned earlier on in your career?
Yeah, keep getting better. That's the focus. There's a certain quality of you know, puck play, and you got to be in a certain level of shape. You got to be skating in a certain way to be able to continuously compete at the NHL level. And there's always something outside what your coaching staff trying to bring to your attention that you can learn and study on your own. That was you know, frankly, coached out of me in my Toronto days, and I really regret being talked out of myself. What had gotten me to that level? What was enjoyable for me about playing the sport? And you know what it is, Frankie, you can't replicate. Look at the veteran players when we played. There's a thickness of skin. There was a resiliency.
Oh, yeah.
There was a knowingness that they had hard-earned, developed over their callous years. And, you know, sometimes there's only one way to go through it, and that's to go through it.
We're in conversation with Connor Carrick, former Maple Leafs defenseman and the host of the Curious Competitor podcast. I want to ask you about that podcast, Connor, because you started it back during the pandemic, if I'm not mistaken. What made you want to get into the podcast world?
I like talking. I like podcasts.
Yeah, fair enough. But Frank,
I do. I really enjoyed you know, the mental stimulation, the exploration. You know how Frank it is. Hockey is a beautiful sport, but it's talking about the same thing.
Well, and also too, our wives get sick of hearing from us too. It's like we got to talk to someone else, right?
We do, and I think you know, the hockey world, you see a lot of people like-minded like you. They look like you. They walk like you. They're the same ethnicity as you. A lot of them, and from similar parts of the world. And there is, you know, some diversity in our game, but just the diversity of conversation, the length, I think, was something I was interested in, the attention needed to host a podcast. It's been really enjoyable. I haven't, you know, I am trying to balance what I feel like is sometimes three full-time jobs, being an athlete, being a dad and husband, and, you know, trying to be a creator of sort. And I want to give my all to all of them, but you only have so much brain space. You only have so much capacity. So
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed doing it. And we'll see what the next level looks like for it.
Well, I don't know if you saw Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors got a little bit of flack when he was going through the podcast. He was doing it during the during the finals, like after the game, going in there, talking about the game. And I know the media brought that up and was talking about how potentially they were giving away some trade secrets. Is that something that, would you do that if you're in the middle of the playoffs? I mean, you're going to get on there and keep doing it, or you think that you probably would put it aside and focus on the game?
It depends. Generally, the way I function is I have a lot of them banked ahead of time, and we'll have a release schedule of sort. In terms of real-time analysis on the game, I mean, that's juicy stuff, right? It's obviously come up in our conversation. I think basketball's done a really good job taking a side, willing to go past blending in and establish personality. Draymond Green is a big figure in Golden State and will go on to do plenty of successful business ventures. It just depends on what kind of experience you want. And if you want to be quiet and focused, right? We talked about Andrew Calviano in his interview. I was listening to, I think it was, Freeman, Elliot Freeman had mentioned something about an interview with Kevin Bieksa and how he iced him pretty good. And then the Stanley Cup was finally awarded. He had joked that, okay, I'm ready for the interview with Kevin now. And that being previous friends. So it just depends on your personality type. And your role on the team. Draymond Green's well established and has had a lot of success, and I think has that creative leniency and leash available. As far as trade secrets, I'm never going to do that because I'll do anything to win. I'd like to, I'll break hands if I have to. I'll instead of dumping pucks in, shoot at your feet. Like I read Chris Chelios' book a few years ago and figured out, oh, that's how you play in the playoffs. And That's not the lane I operate in.
Connor, before we let you go, what's summer look like for you? You're an unrestricted free agent. You're going to be busy training. You've got a kid. You got a pup. What's cooking for the summer?
Yeah, I was going to ask how much longer this is going to go because I got a bunch of clubs calling me right now. No, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens. Spent a lot of the year in the minors, but did really well, and so hopefully there'll be some options for me. I got a trip actually to Frankie Corrado's homeland. I'm going to Italy.
Oh, nice.
I have a wedding overseas and doing a trip to Italy for the first time with my wife. And I regrettably talked her out of that for our honeymoon a few years back. So a little fun. And then right on the other side of that, a whole lot of work I'm excited for. So a lot going on, man.
Nice. Right on. Yeah. Sounds like that would be awesome. Get yourself that pizza in you, because it is good.
Yeah,
pizza,
don't be shy to have a couple carbs out there, man. Yeah. I know you're disciplined. I see you. You eat the greens and the meat, and you got all your supplements, and have a pizza, man.
One in Rome.
Do it for me.
It's a saying for a reason.
I'm going to live forever or die trying. That's my longevity skill. I didn't make that up. But I also know what a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity looks like, and this will be the first time over there. The culture, the food, the enjoyment's a big part of it. Might dabble with some red wine. We'll see how it goes. And, I play with guys. You play with guys. You can survive if you got good hands, the puck boys going back on plays, it can find the middle pop. You got room for a little
Dude,
red wine. And
I've played with guys that treat their body and diet like it's Wonderland. Like, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like,
I think it was Ocho Cinco, the football player, literally his diet was like Big Macs before games. I swear to you, this guy's shoveling Big Macs.
Let me ask Connor this then. If you come back here to Toronto, you think we can get down to the Scotiabank Arena and fire up a pregame meal? You think someone would make us that rosé sauce again?
Oh, that'd be fantastic. And those crispy chicken thighs.
Oh, my God.
You think we get the cookie with our number on them again?
Yeah. See, we need that. Not only do we need it, we deserve it.
Okay.
So
we deserve it.
Yeah. I need that story in a second, Frankie.
I'll bring the candles.
Love it, buddy.
I need that story in a second, Frankie. But Connor, want to wish you thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, and wish you luck next season, pal.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
All the best. Appreciate it. See you, Frankie.
There he is, Connor Carrick, former Maple Leaf defenseman, host of the Curious Competitor podcast, where you can get wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, give
from.
It a listen. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's not just hockey. It's everything. It's
like
awesome.
The Rogan of hockey players.
Yeah,
Talk about it all. You guys mentioned Kadri, though. Not a practice player?
Dude, when I told you this guy is the definition of a gamer, could you not read between the lines on that a little bit?
Not in that way. I didn't really think about it, to be honest with you, but it's like this guy just full-blown mails it in practice,
no,
and then game comes
no,
in.
No, he's a professional.
Well,
he's a professional. He doesn't mail it in practice.
First guy I thought of, though, was Iverson.
He saves it for the game.
Like, I'm like, I thought, so he's Iverson. Yeah, he's Iverson, essentially. It's like practice. Yeah,
we're talking about practice?
I'm about practice. I'm going to go and win a Stanley Cup. I'm
watch what I do in the game.
In a Stanley Cup final. Yeah. Don't talk to me about practice.
This workout here, you ever seen a dumbbell score a goal? Watch, I'll go score a goal for you.
Oh, that's hilarious. All right, coming up next, Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com going to join us. The Tampa Bay Lightning had a locker cleanout today that, for the first time in a couple of years, didn't go as swimmingly as the last couple have. So we'll see what he was able to pick out of locker cleanout today. The laundry list of injuries also came out. We'll tell you about that on the other side. I'm Mike DiStefano, Al's brother, with Frank Corrado in for Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Welcome back into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Mike DiStefano with former Maple Leafs defenseman Frank Corrado with me. And on the line right now, we got a man down in Tampa Bay, Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com. Eric, how are you?
I am good, gentlemen. How are you today?
Oh, I think we're doing fantastic, fantastic. So a little bit of a different tone, I would assume, down at locker cleanout today, given the fact that the last two were coming off of Stanley Cup championship wins. But what did you take out of today's locker cleanout with the Bolts?
Yeah, the sting is real. You know, anytime you lose, I'm sure Frank can atone to that. You know, when you lose the final game of the year, there's 31 teams that are losing the final game of the year. And for this team to get so close to, you know, something that hasn't been done in 40 years, and, you know, and then you look at the long list of injuries that factored into it and understand how close they really did come and how much they had to fight and battle through it. While there is a certain sense of pride about everything that they were able to accomplish, they didn't get the ultimate goal. And I think Steven Stamkos said it best, that after you've won two in a row, you hate the feeling of losing. You absolutely hate it. And I think that's kind of where the tone comes from with this team, having come so close and yet, you know, two wins short of accomplishing, you know, something special.
Julian Brisebois was talking about all the injuries, and like, you just go through the list. There's so many. Sorelli with, like, I can't even go through them all. There's just so many. But I mean, what does that say about this group? The fact that they won two Stanley Cups in a row, they're in the Stanley Cup Finals again for the third year in a row, and they're still laying it on the line. And these guys all wanted to play, like, point with a quad tear. You know, like playing hockey, your quads are your main movers. They're the engines. And this guy, he has a quad tear, and he's still trying to play. Like, what does that say about the dedication and I guess the commitment to winning from this group?
That's the word right there, commitment. You know, we saw it full fold in round two against the Panthers at that game two, where there was a merry-go-round of players going in and out of the locker room because they were blocking shots, getting injured, leaving, coming back. I mean, that's just the mentality that the team has. And, you know, for a team that has won two in a row, and, you know, John Cooper said it more than a couple of times during this particular run about how, you know, it would have been easy to give in. Even when they were down 3-2 to Toronto in round one and giving up two goals in the final minute of the second period of game six, it would have been easy to say, you know what, boys, we've had a great run. We've won two cups. It's just not going to be our year. And to be able to dig down through everything that they had to battle through all those injuries, I mean, there were eight players that they told us about, and I'm sure there's more. I mean, Eric Chernak probably has bumps and bruises all over his body from blocking shots and everything else. So, I mean, in just those eight players, it sounds like Anthony Cirelli's probably going to have surgery on something. You know, Corey Perry's shoulder is going to get looked at. You know, and again, those are just the injuries we know about. So for them to dig down as deep as they did and get as close as they did, it's a testament to how much they care. And that can't be, you know, talked about enough for what they were able to come through to get as far as they did.
Yeah, it's like they know what it takes to win, and they did everything. They put it out on the ice to try and get that third straight cup. It came up just a little bit short, but Eric, do you think that this was probably the most challenging cup run that Tampa had to endure during this, you know, stretch of 3-4 years where they've been potentially the most dominant team in hockey?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, look at what they had to go through. You had to slow down Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner in round one. You had to come back from down 3-2. You faced the President's Trophy winner in round two, and I know they swept them, but that was a hard series, even though it was just 4 games. You fall down 2-0 to the Rangers in the conference finals. You fight your way back. You know, as they said, you face the MVP and the Lester Pearson winner in Austin Matthews. You face the President's Trophy winner in round two. You face the Vezina Trophy winner in round three. And then you went up against the Norris Trophy winner in round four in Colorado, had the second best record in the league. There's no doubt that this was the most challenging. And I think, you know, the word pride, I know I just mentioned it a couple minutes ago. There is an enormous amount of pride for what this team did accomplish, given all those circumstances, given the fact that game six of the Cup final was the 71st playoff game that they played in the last 600 days, you know, going back to the start of the bubble just over 2 years ago, right now, just under 2 years ago at this point. So, it really is incredible what they came so close to being able to do.
When you look at the Eastern Conference next year, I don't see any reason why Tampa Bay can't be back in this position. When you look at the core, the goaltender, but like every year, there's going to be some turnover. And what's the turnover look like for the Lightning heading into next year?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Julian Breezeblad does. We know the salary cap issues that they have. Andre Palat's an unrestricted free agent. Nick Paul, who was fantastic for them in the playoffs, is an unrestricted free agent. Jan Ruda is an unrestricted free agent. But everybody else is under contract that was on this team. You know, so they don't have a ton of turnover. They don't have a ton of stuff that they're going to have to do. I don't wonder if maybe there's a trade in the works somewhere. I know Julian even came out today and said they've already had contract discussions, at least open the discussions with Paul Palat and Ruda. They would like to bring all three of them back. And if that's the case, you know, and as long as you get number 88 net protecting your goal, you're going to have a chance. And, you know, Steven Stamkos is coming off the best regular season of his career points-wise, and Alex Killorn had the best regular season of his career. Victor Hedman had the best regular season of his career. So even though these players are still, you know, 31, 32 years old, they're still kind of in their prime and still producing. So, yeah, there's no reason to think that they won't have a really good chance of potentially being back in the same position next year.
Yeah, like I was seeing that Nick Paul was talking about how he loved it in Tampa Bay, obviously. He made it all the way to a Cup final after not having too much success with the Ottawa Senators for years. He wants to come back. What do you think a deal would look like for Nick Paul, though? I look at Tampa Bay. They've been trying to squeeze in guys for years, and obviously, you know, they've had to move on from guys like Tyler Johnson last year, unable to re-sign Coleman, and they kind of had to move on from Yanni Gourde. They've done a lot of cap gymnastics throughout the last few seasons. Can you see a scenario where maybe there's some guys who could potentially be, you know, trimming of the fat type of guys who could go in order to bring these pieces back?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the culture that's been established, right? I think it started with Stamkos, you know, 5 years ago when, you know, he stayed in Tampa Bay, took less money than he would have gotten on the open market, and that sort of established the tone here. And the other thing to keep in mind, you know, the cap's only going up by $1 million this year. I believe next year, right, it's supposed to take a significant jump. So that's something that you can sell some of these players on, too, that, hey, look, the cap's going up. Maybe give us a one-year deal, and we'll take care of you next year, because that's the one thing this team has a history of doing, especially with their bridge guys, right? Take the bridge deal now. We'll take care of you later. Braden Point did it. Nikita Kucherov did it. Anthony Cirelli did it. Mikhail Sergachev did it. So they have that ability to kind of stretch things out a little bit. But that's where I don't wonder, though, if a trade of some sort maybe comes into play, especially if you want to think you can keep both Palat and Paul. And as far as Paul goes, you know, if the reports were true that he was looking for about $3 million out of Ottawa, you know, $3 million goes a lot longer here in Tampa because of the tax situation. Even if he was $2.5 million, I mean, look, I've heard that he's already house hunting, and if you're already house hunting, you have a pretty good idea of what you might end up making on your next deal, and there's a pretty good indication that you're probably coming back. So that's where things stand with Nick Paul. At this point, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't re-sign. Even though, boy, he could hit the jackpot, couldn't he? I mean, this could be his big contract if he wanted to, because there'd be 30 other teams out there looking for him, considering what he did in the postseason.
And I would imagine it doesn't take much to, you know, you get into Tampa, you get traded there, you sign there, you get a little taste of it, living down there, playing down there, being on a good team like that. You're like, yeah, I'll do some house hunting. Like, call your agent, like, hey, by the way, I'm going to start looking for a house. You get started on this contract negotiation.
I still think his nickname, Nick Paul Does It All, is such a great moniker.
You know what, Al's brother, speaking of doing it all, I thought Steven Stamkos, this was the most impressive I've seen Steven Stamkos probably since earlier on in his career.
And he's had the year, probably.
Yeah, he's had like the health struggles, you know, that have hampered him along the way, but he was so impressive in this entire playoffs. Eric, what can you say about his leadership and his performance in this playoffs for the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Inspiring. Just inspiring. You know, watching him laying out the block shots, you know, going out there and trying to win key faceoffs, you know, what, game three of the final against the Avalanche. I can't ever remember him winning 20 faceoffs. He won 23 of 31 faceoffs in that game. And just stepping up and being vocal. Like, it was sort of his impassioned speech going into the third period of game six against Toronto that kind of got, you know, things kind of turned around a little bit. They got lucky. Oh, he can debate the high stick call against Cal Foot, and I'm sure Leafs fans are probably nodding their head right now.
Yeah.
But they took advantage of that opportunity, you know, got the tying goal, ended up winning it in overtime and pushing that to seven games. You know, but yeah, he's the everything that about him, right? We know him as the one-timer, the elite scorer. He's going to go down as one of the greatest goal scorers of his generation. But his growth and maturity in all aspects of his game, you know, he can go out there now and they'll trust him in defensive situations. And, you know, they'll put him out there for penalty kill faceoffs. And if he loses it, they don't have a concern about him being out there trying to do that job. The shot blocking, the words on the bench. I mean, there's just so much about his game and all aspects of it that have kind of rounded out. And again, we are still talking about a guy who set a career high this year with 104 points, 105 points, you know, what he finished with. So inspirational is the first word that comes to my mind when I think about the job and what he did for his teammates in this run.
Yeah, he was amazing. I mean, even the last game, he's out there blocking shots, just blew up McKinnon. That was just a hit you didn't see.
That's what I mean.
Career.
It's like it's the complete package.
Yeah,
right? He's doing everything.
Evolved his game into being just a gamer. The dude's a gamer now.
Yeah,
as opposed to being just a lethal scorer.
And that's leading. Like that's leading. You drive everyone into the fight with you. I thought that was really impressive performance.
Absolutely, Eric. I gotta ask you this question before we let you go, because for years, Victor Hedman has been the standard amongst defenseman in the NHL. He's just, you know, he's been the number one guy for so many years. I'm curious to get a Tampa perspective. Where do you think the conversation sits between Cale Makar, the next guy up on the totem pole who potentially could be taking over and passing the torch there, and Victor Hedman? What can you say about Makar and the performance he put on this playoff?
Yeah, he was incredible. There's still parts of his game he has to improve on. I mean, you look at the winning goal in Game 5 that Andre Palat scored. You know, he kind of puts himself out of position, opens up that lane. So there are aspects of his game at the defensive end that he's going to improve upon. I mean, we forget, what is he, 23 years old?
Yeah.
Ridiculous that he's just 23 years old and doing what he can do. But him with the puck on a stick, and I don't think we saw the full Cale Makar in the Cup Final. We certainly saw it at Spurs during the playoffs. But he's got another level to get to, and that's a scary, scary thing to think about, because what he can do with the puck on his stick, I mean, look, when you get thrown around in comparisons to Bobby Orr, I don't think people take that lightly, but I also don't think it's out of context, because what he can do with the puck on his stick, on the rush, joining the rush, leading the rush, you know, being in position, he's just a fantastic, fantastic player. Right now, at this point of both the players' careers, I'd probably lean towards Hedman, and maybe I'm a little biased because I watch him play every day, but he's more of a well-rounded defenseman. He certainly can't do the things that Makar does with the puck. I mean, what defenseman can in this league?
Exactly.
But there's so many other aspects of Victor Hedman's game, that the two-way aspect of it and everything else. But Makar is going to get there, and it's I'm sure plenty of people already have him in that slot. But if not, he's going to be there very soon. He's a fantastic, fantastic elite player, and it's going to be a joy to watch that guy for another 10 years.
Imagine he was 6'4", 225 like Victor Hedman. What that guy could... Oh, my God. But, 23. He still probably has another level to get to. But thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate you taking the time to join us, and hopefully we can chat again down the road.
Okay, thanks, guys. I appreciate the time.
All right, there he is. Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com. You know how I know that he is an old-school cat?
Tell me.
Because he called the Ted Lindsay the Lester Pearson.
Yeah.
The Lester B. Talked about the Lester B. I don't remember when they changed that. Actually, it wasn't that long ago. I think it was within the last, like, 6 or 7 years. Because when Daniel Sedin won the award, it was still the Lester B. Pearson, if I'm not mistaken.
2009, 2010, something like that?
Like 09, 010, or 010, 11, one of those two. They both had, like, back-to-back years.
Right.
I think it was For Daniel in 10-11. Yeah.
Okay, so it probably turned into the 10 Lindsay right when I turned pro. I'll bet after the lockout. Would that make sense?
Maybe.
After
maybe
that half-season lockout?
That might be when that happened.
I don't know. I'm just making things up now.
but we were kind of talking about this yesterday. I mean, Tampa Bay, Toronto is the favorite in a lot of books to next to Colorado as the second team to get in there. But
why?
I mean, Tampa Bay, you can't count that team out. And if he's here, Nick Paul's already looking around, looking to buy some real estate.
What a play by Nick Paul. And like, you got to think about this too. You're like, okay, I'm going to make three a year, maybe a little more. My house is going to be on the water. Hold on, let me just fire up my concierge. Hey, can you get me a good price on a boat? I'd like a boat. can you get me a pool guy? Like, and then you're thinking about
well, you didn't play in any of the Southern. No, I think what Pittsburgh
dude,
I guess, would have been
I
the
never
most
played.
You got
I had a year where I was coming off. I can't remember which injury I was coming off, and I called my agent and I told him, listen, I've played in enough cold places in upstate New York and Pennsylvania. I said, please just tell all the California AHL teams that I'm available and I'm ready to start playing. And he called me back a few days later. He goes, I don't have anything out there. He goes, one team said they would do it, but they have too many vets. Mm. And I said, okay, what else do we have? He said, Belleville or Binghamton? I said, well, that's a tough bounce. Let's do Belleville because it's closer to home. Actually, you know what? I really enjoyed my time in Belleville. I think they do a good job with that program and they had some good players come through there. The coach there, Troy Mann.
Yeah,
that's an NHL coach. Like he should be on someone's short list to be an NHL coach. I really do believe that. The detail he has and the way he communicates with his players, I was really impressed with him, and I learned a lot from him. A lot of the stuff that I apply to the work here and the work with Taddy during the Leafs pregame, or intermissions and postgame, a lot of that comes from coaches I've learned along the way from. But Troy Mann is definitely one of them.
Well, there's another name to add to the list of potential coaching candidates, up-and-comers, potentially over the next couple. There's still a couple of spots out there. I think Detroit's looking for a coach,
yeah.
Washington, or Winnipeg looking for a coach.
The Detroit one makes sense because you have a young up-and-coming team. Well, you have a young up-and-coming core.
There was some rumblings. Potentially they're waiting on the Lightning for them to finish up their year, and then they were maybe looking into one of the Cooper's assistants, right? Coming from Steve Yzerman.
You know what I think it is with the coaching world, too? I think you really need people advocating for you, like outside of your circle. I feel like there's a lot of word of mouth, a lot of like vetting through other people. And if you don't have the big connections or the big name connections, it's hard for, you know, to get your foot in the door. Your work really, really has to speak for itself. And I think for Troy it does, but we'll see.
Yeah, hey, hopefully he gets to the league, gets to the NHL at some point. we think there potentially was a bit of flushing action during the Connor Carrick interview. We've pulled in the audio.
We're going to investigate.
We're going to investigate on the other side. There may have been a bit of a Sean Burke flush moment there. And Bob McKenzie put out his draft rankings, his final draft rankings for the year. There's an interesting name up at number
Juicy,
one.
Juicy, isn't it?
We'll talk about it on the other side. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frank Corrado. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Frankie, we're pretty sure we heard a flush in the middle of your guy, Connor Carrick's
interview.
We
need to get to the bottom of this.
Let's get to the bottom of it. All right, let's tee this up. This was Connor Carrick. We had him earlier. If you missed the interview, it was fantastic.
Great conversation. Check out his podcast, The Curious Competitor. But now we need to investigate if we got a flush.
Yeah, let's play this audio and let's kind of break it down.
Someone before the game, I think it's Dan Hamhuis before the game, told me, he goes, when you make
100%.
A point shot, you think so?
Oh, that sounded, get one more time, one more time, one more time.
Someone before the game, I think it's Dan Hamhuis before the game, told me, he goes, when you make a point shot, do we have something for comparison? We have a confirmed flush that we can compare it to, right?
So, years ago, Sean Burke flushed while on with Dave Naylor. This is what a confirmed flush sounds like. play.
Of course, you are the goaltender coach, and in this part of the world, we are interested in him because he's an Olympian going as the number three goaltender.
Are you kidding? Oh, and Naylor starts to laugh right there. He realizes, like, absolutely, this man just flushed the toilet.
Give me the Naylor one again. Give me the Burke one.
Of course, you are the goaltender coach, and in this part of the world, we are interested in him because he's an Olympian going as the number three goaltender.
I've never heard that before.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's aggressive. That's aggressive. Let's hear it one more time. Connor Carrick. Now that we know what an actual flush sounds like, I'm pretty sure, dude, it almost sounds as if, because then it gets quiet, I think he realized, oh, crap, and muted himself, because then you hear yourself a little bit more clearly. So let me know. Put that in your noodle. Let me know if that's what you hear coming out.
Someone before the game, I think it's Dan Hamhuis, before the game told me, he goes, when you make a point shot.
Oh. So Nick brought the sound down because he heard that going on. So he brought the sound down is what happened. So I think Connor Carrick hit us with a bit of a flush.
He got caught a little bit there.
I think he got caught with a flush.
Wow.
Definitely happened.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do, man. Hey, man, I don't know what to tell you.
Everyone flushes at least a couple of times a day. It's all good. Most people prefer not to do that action while you're
what a move,
live
though,
on radio.
What a move putting it on mute.
Hey, man, if Sean Burke's doing it, that guy had a pretty good career.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's what we're missing out on. Like, maybe that's what we got to do to take our careers to the next level. Get a live flush on
that's
live
good. We
TV
got one.
Or
we got one.
Live radio. Yeah, that was great. Bobby Mack's rankings came out today. His final draft rankings. I look forward to these each and every year because I'm a draft junkie.
You're a draft
I just
guy.
Love to get into this stuff, whether it's NFL draft, NHL draft, whatever it may be. And forever, Shane Wright was the consensus number one pick in the draft. Gonna be the guy, number one. Montreal would be crazy not to take this guy. There's a new cowboy in at number one. Kire Slafkovsky from TPS in the Finnish Elite League. The number one prospect on Bob McKenzie's draft rankings.
How about
and
this?
This is one that he records. He compiles this from, I think he speaks to 10 general managers in the league, and that's kind of how he builds his draft rankings. So the general managers in the league saying that Slafkovsky, probably the best player in this draft.
Slafkovsky, 6'4", 230-pound left winger at the age of 18.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's not even fair.
Would you enjoy going into the corner with that guy?
I don't know. Probably not.
I don't even think
I want to engage. I just want to stick on puck. Like, I just don't. I don't know, man. Like, I haven't seen the guy play. I don't know what he's all about. I know Shane Wright's a really good player.
Yeah.
And Shane Wright's been the consensus number one since he was 15 years old. But, you know, for this guy to, I guess, if you want to call it, bump Shane Wright in what people are saying as the number one pick, he's got to be a hell of a player.
He, this year, went and played at the Olympics, scored 7 goals at the Olympics for Slovakia, also played the World Championships this year as well for Slovakia. So he's been playing with men for a long time.
Yeah. That lost year killed, like, it hurt a lot of players, and Shane Wright's no different.
Yeah.
No matter how good he is, that not playing a full season like that is going to hurt you. But you know what? I think eventually in the long run, Shane Wright will turn out to be the player that we always thought he was going to be, and it's going to be a very, very good player.
I hope so. We'll see if he ends up being the pick that Montreal takes at number one in the draft next week. But Yuri Slafkovsky taking over the number one spot on Bob McKenzie's final draft rankings. You can head to TSN.ca for the full rankings and analysis. Also hear from Bobby Mack himself making an appearance on Overdrive later today at 6:25. That does it for us today, Frankie. Fun show.
Great show.
Thanks to everybody behind the scenes, everyone who joined the show as well. If you missed it, you can check it out on TSN1050.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mike DiStefano for Frank Corrado. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch Gameplay with Matt Cause next.